It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello and welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name is James Truepenny. This is my show. Today we are at New Beginnings for New Japan Pro Wrestling in Sapporo. First two shows of their three-night swing with the New Beginnings franchise there, the shows at the beginning of the year. There will also an endless Road 2 tour that spanned two continents, but we're not going to bother looking at that. We'll just stick with the stuff you need to know and tell the stories that were there. Now today, joining me and making his debut on the Truepenny Show is someone you know very well. He's one of the co-hosts of Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind, former journalist of Total Wrestling Magazine, and a fine, upstanding gentleman of your Scotland, Mr. Tony Cottam. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I must say, this is a very weird experience, because usually I listen to all my podcasts in 1.5 speed, so see, hearing your voice at a normal speed is kind of a shock to the system.
He's trying to fit it all in. I used to edit
so
like
many
that.
Podcasts, so little time.
Well, Tony is here to join us today. Our regular crew had some unfortunate business going on, just seriously, one of those weeks when no one could get to us. So Tony has kindly helped us out. I'm sure you will treat him kindly, and he's going to give his opinions on some of the matchups and the storylines that are going on in New Japan Pro Wrestling. We're just going to concentrate on the big shows. We're not going to concentrate on the American shows. We're not going to concentrate on the Row 2 shows, just the big shows, because well, a lot of stuff went on, to be honest, and it was a bit different, and it was very cool, and I enjoyed it. What are you thinking of currently of the product of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Tony? Where are you at with New Japan? What are you feeling?
I'm loving it, actually. It feels like this kind of one of those in-between phases where they're shifting from the sort of Omega Okada at the top to Jay White coming through, and then you've got the Tanahashi holding on there, so you've got that sort of linchpin between the two different generations. It's strange that Tanahashi is the guy that's held all these generations together through all of them. You'd think sort of Okada would be that guy, but they've gone back to Tanahashi time and time again, and why wouldn't you?
Oh, exactly. I mean, he's still an astounding wrestler. even this day and age.
Astounding hair as well, as we like to talk about in the Truepenny Show, I believe.
Very, very true. We have plenty of hair talk to go with today. Also, we'll go slightly back. The Road to the New Beginning show featured Kushida in his last ever New Japan Pro Wrestling match, and Tanahashi did point out then, I always seem to be there to say goodbye to people, which was kind of a sad statement, but it's very, very true. He said goodbye to Shinsuke Nakamura. He said goodbye to Kushida, two of his running buddies for the last 10 years. He's there to say goodbye. And one of the reasons why they've linked this back together, it does feel very much like 2015, introducing Kenny Omega, trying to get him over as a threat to the world championship, intercontinental champion, moving up to heavyweight. Feels very much like that, the same kind of run with Jay White. I don't think Jay's going to have an easy run to the championship like AJ Styles or Kenny Omega did to an extent. Well, Kenny didn't really, did he? But he had an easy run to championship gold. I don't think Jay's necessarily going to get there on this particular tour, but he's certainly been given the big, big push.
Oh, yeah, totally. You can see this is the guy that they're sort of putting the bank behind, so to speak. He's had a phenomenal year, even if you don't count in the wins, just the performances alone, and just being in the ring with these guys, being associated with these guys, that's a hell of a rub for anyone, let alone someone who's relatively unknown outside a New Japan fan power crowd. You know, if he was going to be touring the Americas, the American fans might not know who he is as much, after this year, I'm sure they will.
Definitely. Right then, we will move on to the first show of the New Beginnings shows, which was in Sapporo, 4861 at the Hokkaido Prefectural Sports Center on the 2nd of February. That was opened by Ren Narita and Yue Uemari. 9 minutes and 45 seconds of a thoroughly enjoyable Young Lions match. What are you thinking of the Young Lions of the current crop there, Tony?
It's good to see them getting a nice little chance, because I noticed on the American tour, the American version of the Young Lions were getting to do some Broadways at the start of the shows. So it's always good to see these guys coming through, because, I mean, we all know from WWE, one of their problems over the past few years has been creating new stars. New Japan never seemed to have that problem. The Young Lions come through and they fill the gaps that needed plugged when they need plugged.
Yeah, definitely. It's certainly one of the best development programs in pro wrestling history. You know, you look at this dojo and what it's produced, and you know, there's Keiji Muto and there's Hashimoto and there's all these people that over the space of 40 years have become the product, not just in Japan, but in North America as well.
Yeah, it's certainly like a laundry list of who's who of wrestling these days, isn't it? It certainly beats the legs of Ty Dillinger coming out of NXT.
Okay, then. Next match was Manubi Nakanishi and Toa Henry, Team Lumpy, I'm calling them. And they defeated Ayota Yoshida and Shota Umino, 8 minutes and 53 seconds. Shota Umino and Ayota Yoshida throwing some tag team, actually, science there to, in this particular tour. They actually look like a team of people who knew what they were doing, which they didn't during Tag League. The bits I saw of Tag League, I think they were intentionally ropey. They couldn't have been that bad, but they were trying to put some tension between the two. But Yoshida and Umino were very, very good in this matchup. And Nakanishi, he's old and he eats a lot. NRA, long way to go, but he's getting there. Sorry, Corey. Sorry, Tony.
I thought you were talking about me there.
No, not you. You can move faster than Nakanishi could. And the thing is with Nakanishi, I rag on Nakanishi all the time, but he hasn't changed a thing in the last 25 years. He still wrestles exactly the same way, just slightly slower.
And he was... Well, if that's how you can keep a career going, then we'll be tied us to throw shade on it.
Oh, no. A former IWGP Heavyweight Champion. I think he won the G1 a couple of times. He was like a massive star. I just don't understand how. But anyway... The Road Warriors took a shine to him. That's the reason why he's the size he is.
Ah, there you go. That's, yeah. That explains a lot.
It does. They showed him the Road Warrior workout. Anywho, so hence why he's been massive ever since. In that book with Chris Charlton, he was talking about like their eating habits. When he had the tag team with Strongman about 2 or 3 years ago, for those of you who don't know who Strongman is, he was an American wrestler who spent a lot of time in CMLL, who was even bigger than Nakanishi and even less mobile, if that's possible. And he wouldn't eat carbohydrates ever. Guy looked like a house. And yeah, Nakanishi's like, yeah, I don't mind the carbohydrates. It just eats everything ever. Anyway, next matchup was Hiroshi Tenzan and Tiger Mask. They defeated Suzuki Gun, Taka Michinoku, and Takashi Ayazuka by disqualification in 9 minutes and 26 seconds. This is a bit of a story to tell behind this particular matchup. Takashi Ayazuka has been a professional wrestler since 1993 or so. Maybe before then, 1989. He was on the first show, New Japan show, we reviewed as a full show on the Beginner's Guide to Japanese Professional Wrestling, where he wrestled Hiroshi Tenzan at the Tokyo Dome in 1993.
That's a nice little fact there. I'm sure he did it just for the purposes of this podcast.
Probably. But Ayazuka is on his way to retirement. The next big show will be his last show. And on these particular shows, Tenzan has been trying to get Ayazuka, the crazy one who beats up commentators, to shake his hand before he's said and done. And that's not necessarily going to happen, I don't think.
I like these. This is what New Japan does better than any promotion for me, is these little stories that if you didn't know anything about it, you wouldn't be aware of that was going on. But when you sort of look into it and you get the tiny little details, then that's just the perfect thing for it. It all ties together in the end.
It does as well. I mean, like, Ayazuka spent the first 10 years of his career being the most boring wrestler on the planet. His major claim to fame in the first early parts of his career was he was the one that tagged with Tatsumi Fujinami and wrestled the Steiner brothers at Super Bowl III and got his head kicked in.
That is a thing to put on your CV.
And then in the early 2000s, when Gedo and Jedo took over the book at New Japan Pro Wrestling, they were kind of like, we're getting rid of Deadwood. Unless you do something interesting, we're not keeping you. And to a lot of wrestlers, they were very open about it. They said, because we've got to make this company pay, and if you're not pulling weight, then you're off. And Ayazuka came up with this crazy character. And he went from being the most boring, straight-ahead, shoot-style wrestler you ever came across to this thoroughly interesting guy that just runs around like a maniac.
Yeah, it's great when you just get these guys that something happens, whether it is the threat of imminent firing, but this is like a trigger that goes off inside their head, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute, I actually have a personality. I'm going to show you that personality. And then it's like, where the hell was this for 10 years?
Yeah, it's like... Charles Wright in WWE, like all the misses before he got to The Godfather. They used to call him the black hole of personality because of Papa Shango and Karma, and actually The Godfather. Not that we these days condone such behaviour, but it actually showed he actually had a personality.
I mean, the other guy, a perfect example of that would be Kane. You go back through like Unabomb and Isaac Yankem, DDS, and even Fake Diesel before that Kane personality hit. And it wasn't even the Kane character that got Glenn Jacobs over. It was Glenn Jacobs' willingness to do absolutely anything that was asked of him and shining.
Yes, and that's what makes you a mayor of a large town in Tennessee. Do the things. I was a mayor once. I know the things you have to do, and Glenn does them very well.
Have you ever electrocuted a billionaire's sons?
No.
Not that we know of. Not that we can talk about the court cases are settled anyway.
Yeah. I mean, in my personal life, no. No, it's just not one of those things that you kind of get to do in Driffield. Mm. speaking of imminent firing, Takemichi Noku had his last ever show for Cage Dojo, the promotion he started 10 years ago. For those of you who don't know, we probably have gone over this before, we'll explain it again. Takemichi Noku runs two organizations outside of New Japan. He ran K-Dojo and he ran Kaientai, named after the group that he was obviously in the WWE. Kaientai doesn't wrestle that much these days. His main focus was K-Dojo because they've got some brilliant, brilliant trainees, much like Kyoto Shishida and a few other people as well. And he was mainly concentrating there on his outside of New Japan business. However, having hid an affair, which presented presenter, try again, having hid an affair for the last 8 years, which currently has presented a child, and his wife has also had a child, it was conceived not particularly good sport for him to be an executive, nor indeed an active wrestler for K-Dojo anymore, and he has sadly left the company.
Yeah, that was the outside of New Japan business that he was trying to keep going.
Yes, but there you go. That's Taka for you. He's kind of full-time with New Japan Pro Wrestling now, and all his pay has gone from his K-Dojo stuff. He's taking a cut in pay and won't be appearing them for at least a year, if he goes back ever at all. I think the idea is that he's just done and let the company go on to new things. And K-Dojo is an awesome company. You should go check their stuff out. They did a big show with BJW and DDT, I think, recently. And they've been long-term working partners, and I think you can probably find that somewhere. But go check out K-Dojo, because we talked a lot about them on the Sendai Girls show, because I'm trying to remember the name of the young lady who was Sendai Girls Junior Champion. She was a K-Dojo lady too. Okay, then, moving on. Oh, I should ask you, have you any thoughts on this particular tag team matchup, or are these older gentlemen that are coming to the end of their time?
It's always nice to give the guys that have been there and done that, you know, they get a chance to have the one last run or the one last shine. And Taka's one of these names that he just never seems to get any older when you look at him. Maybe the bags under the eyes get slightly bigger, but nothing else about him ever changes.
No, Taka, I've been watching Taka, I can't remember the first time I watched Takemichi Noku. I'm guessing it was his run in WWE, the first run in WWE. He'd never been going 4 or 5 years then. But we didn't have access in this country to ECW that easily. So I didn't see his ECW debut. But you look back to those old Michinoku Pro tapes. I read about him because Finlay Martin had written about him in Powerslam, and I knew how good he was. And I watched not long ago, actually, one of my favorite matches with him in was for the Independent World Junior Heavyweight Championship at FMW Anniversary 5. And I can't remember who he was wrestling, but he was absolutely stunning. He won the championship, and it was like that was the best wrestling match on that card, like pure wrestling match.
Sorry, it was one of those names that always seemed to pop up in like your Power Slams or your Aptamags that you would take a notice of, and you'd always make a mental note, I need to see this guy because that name keeps popping up, so he must be something.
Yeah, I mean, him and three of his mates held the entire WWF Junior Heavyweight Division together for like 3 years.
And then Brian Christopher came in, but let's not talk about that.
No, let's not. But, you know, it's like, that's pretty sweet. If you can do that, that's pretty cool. And Taka has had a long-range effect on junior heavyweight wrestling and the way people wrestle. I mean, you know, Zack Sabre Jr., he's having an effect on him now. Obviously, it's a slightly kayfabe story mentoring, but it's still a mentoring, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's you can't not hang around with Taka for any length of time. I mean, not just Taka, but any of these older New Japan guys that have been there and done it. You can't not absorb something by osmosis from them at some point. It's going to sink into you somehow, and it's going to affect your style. And if it affects it, and given Zach the same sort of caliber of career and length of career as Taka's had, then that's no bad thing.
Right then, we move on to the next match, which was a big multi-man tag team match. Bullet Club, Chase Owens, Taiji Ishimori, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, Yujihiro Takahashi lost to Raisuke Taguchi, Toriyano Yoshihashi, Tomoki Honma, and Togi Makabe in this Chaos GBH Regular Army crossover thing that's been going on since the end of the G1, more or less. And it's producing some rum results, because essentially you've got Great Bash Heel are back together again, kind of, with bits of Chaos. And it's all very nice. It is my dream kind of thing, because being a Chaos guy and a regular Army guy, I've always wanted the two to kind of like re-merge again. But you've kind of like got three regular factions going up against one. It's starting to be slightly unfair. I mean, Taguchi and Yano on the same team, who can deal with that?
Right, well, here's where you may have an issue, and I might get dumped off this podcast instantly, but everyone on the Troopany show seems to have the one guy that they just can't get, or can't get into Taguchi's mind. I just don't get it. I can't see it. I just don't. So if you want me to leave the room, I'll say
no, you're
now.
Fine, you're fine, you're fine. You're all okay. You know, Christy is very, very positive towards Yoshihashi and doesn't like it whenever any of us are mean to him. So, you know.
Which is only when we're a week, so.
I mean, Yoshi's good. We like him. But me and Mal. The thing is, me and Alex Watt, for the first 3 years of this podcast, were saying the Yoshihashi push is coming. It's coming. And it finally came, and he brained himself on ringside 5 years after we said it would happen. So he's not our favourite. We've lost belief slightly in him. But I can understand why you would find Risuke Taguchi not appealing. I mean, you know, there are plenty of other people who do find him appealing. The WrestleSplania podcast guys and girls, they love him. but yeah, I can understand that. I mean, there are people in New Japan I don't get too. Actually, not too many of them at the minute. They're all right.
This is what makes wrestling, and especially New Japan, great. It's like there's no definitive answer to who's the best guy. You know, we could sit here. Have like 30-40 minutes on, oh, is it Tanahashi or Takahashi or Omega or Okada? You know, there's no definitive best answer. Like, it's not like football where you have a definitive, oh, they're the league champions, they're the best. It's not like that. This is what makes these kind of shows, these kind of discussions so entertaining.
I mean, I've argued for a long time that Toru Yano has to be in the equation for one of the best wrestlers in the world, because he earns about $400,000 a year for doing three things and like working for 2 minutes a night.
I know, I'd love Yano. When I went to see the Ring of Honor show at Edinburgh, yeah, I was so glad Yano was there and I got to see him. It was incredible. It was absolutely fantastic. It was everything I wanted it to be, and so much less and so much more at the same time.
Well, I mean, the issue in this particular match is Tama Tonga is having a crisis of personality. He's trying to be good guy Tama Tonga, and it's starting to affect the matches of Bullet Club.
I love nice guy Tama Tonga. It's just going to turn into a meme on the internet somewhere with just him smiling and with a thumbs up pointing at things. It's going to be this generation's version of Buddy Christ from the Kevin Smith movies.
It is. I mean, just screaming his way through as Tangaloa just dragged him into double teams that he didn't want to be part of, and trying to get Jado from Stott to stop cheating. And it's quite clear that Chase and Yujiro are so happy to be back, but they can't get on with the things they want to get on with because the rest of them are getting in the way.
Yeah, Chase Owens is a guy I think he's vastly underrated. I think he might be a breakout star either this year or the years to come. I think there's a lot there that they haven't done a lot with yet.
Chase is absolutely awesome. He's the best tag wrestler in the world, best individual tag team wrestler in the world. You know, you look at the matches he was having last year, and he was either tagging with Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, or Kota Ibushi, and he just dropped into those teams like he was made for all of them. You know, he's the best individual tag wrestler I've seen since Arn Anderson, I think.
Yeah, I was going to draw that comparison. Yeah. Arn Anderson was the exact name I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the Ricky Morton's protege. You know, he's had all that Southern-style tag team wrestling psychology nailed into him, and he's a really good singles wrestler, and he's got good character. He knows what he's doing. I don't know if New Japan believe in him that much to give him any form of push, but I would really like to see it myself.
Yeah, I think he's definitely under. Like you say, the performances in the tag matches that he's had, and that's a laundry list of big names that he's wrestled with. And if all of them are vouching for him, then there's definitely something there. So I mean, hopefully something does come of it. Like I said, maybe not this year. I think this year might be reserved for other things, but possibly the year after, I wouldn't be surprised to see him having a bit of a head up the card.
I think as well, you know, they will be the secondary tag team behind G.O.D., so they'll be for probably the first Bullet Club team in line, him and Yujiro going against L.I.J., which could be interesting, actually. It might be might not be a bad match. They'd have to really pump them two up to get them anywhere. Because they eat too many pins, the pair of them. But if they could do something, if they could get them on a roll, I think it'd be interesting.
In New Japan, is one of the few promotions where it's like eating a lot of pins, it does still mean anything, but you can reverse that within like two or three matches. You know, you give someone a clean win or a spirited loss somewhere, and that's as good as like 6 months of definitive booking in any other promotion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they've done it for ages. Mike Enos, who used to be part of the Beverly Brothers in WWE, had pinfall victories over Keiji Muto, you know. He's the biggest name in Japanese wrestling, but like this guy from Minnesota had pinfall victories over him because it's a sport and those things happen.
It's a lost art is how to make someone in one match. It's like if you watch a lot of the American companies, again we're probably picking on WWE a bit here, but their 50-50 booking has just ruined the actual art of making a star by giving someone a concerted push or making someone look good in defeat, because you know if they win this week they're going to lose next week because that's how it goes. But in Japan, a win and a loss means something. Getting a win doesn't necessarily mean as much as how you lost in this case. New Japan seemed to have figured that out a lot better and a lot quicker than anyone else.
We all have to look at Kota Ibushi. I mean, he was an absolute freight train with tons of momentum, and they needed to get the belt off of him and make it look believable that Will Ospreay, a junior heavyweight, could beat him. Stretch a job, that was achieved. Made Will Ospreay look amazing in the process.
Yep, totally. It's simple booking when you do it well, but when you make a mess of it, cringy.
Indeed. Right then, we had a six-man tag match. Suzuki Gun, El Desperado, Tai Chi, Yoshinobu Kanemaru. They defeated Los Ignorables de Japón, Bushi, Shingo Takagi, and Tetsuya Naito in 13 minutes and 28 seconds, setting the tone for what they thought would happen over the weekend. Suzuki Gun, on the next show on the 3rd, would challenge for the junior heavyweight titles of Bushi and Shingo Takagi. And there were some special single matches later in the evening as well. This was pretty good, but it's LIJ and Suzuki Gun going against each other, so it's always going to be pretty good. It's impossible for these people to have a bad match.
Yeah, it's interchangeable parts, and you take one cog out and put another one in, and it's just going to be the same machine in the end.
Yeah, there's five of the best tag team wrestlers in the world, and Tai Chi. Long-time listeners of this show will know Tai Chi, don't get it. In the same way you don't get Raisuke Takeuchi. Yeah.
See, Tai Chi's worst. It's just, I don't dislike him. I don't like him. He's just there.
I understand they've got to do something with him now they've got him. And he is kind of over, but it just... Anywho. And as well, because he's feuding with Naito, who's a guy I can hot and cold with. I know he's awesome and he can do amazing things, but he's got to be in there with somebody I really enjoy to make those matches worthwhile for me. That's a personal taste thing. I know other people just love the guy. Alex Watt absolutely adores Naito, so does Chelsea Spolin. However,
yeah, I'm on that boat as well.
Yeah, I like the guy and I like his story and I like the way I'm more interested in the way his story develops necessarily than what the match is going to do. So yeah, so in wrestling Tai Chi. We'll get to that on the next card, because actually I didn't think it was as bad as it could be from my head, and we'll talk about it then. But what are your thoughts on the old guy Shingo Takagi and Bushi as tag team champions in the junior heavyweight division?
I got a lot of time for Bushi. I really, really love Bushi. I'm not sure how long this tag run is going to go for, but in New Japan, you know, holding the belts is a prestigious thing. You know, they don't just hot potato them around like they're doing in other promotions in the world. I think Bushi's going to come out of this smelling of roses. I'm not sure where Takagi goes after it all comes crashing to a halt.
To heavyweight, I think. Shingo is the world's tallest junior heavyweight. This is worse than when Tai Chi was a junior heavyweight. He's even taller than Tai Chi was, and he's bigger too. Apart from Shingo being a bit big, I'm fine with whatever they do with them too, because they're really good and they're a really good tag team to watch as well. Where was I? Oh yes. Kanemura and Desperado are an awesome team as well. They are a lot of fun to watch, and I really enjoy watching them too. So I was looking forward to the show on the next night. Okay then, singles match, special singles match. Minoru Suzuki defeats Sanada in 19 minutes and 40 seconds of a fantastic singles match, like bordering on match of the year already. Singles match. apart from Wrestle Kingdom main event, because that's always match of the year until like 3 weeks from the end. But actually, Minoru Suzuki and Sanada were made for each other. It's two opposing styles. So you've got Minoru Suzuki, the strong style guy. You couldn't get much more strong style than Minoru Suzuki. Grew up in the New Japan Dojo, genuine MMA guy. And then you've got Sanada, who's a pure Kings Road wrestler, which seems a bit strange, but he started off in All Japan Pro Wrestling. He is the protege of Keiji Muto, which kind of sends him to a bit of a strong style direction. But all his match ideas and all his match booking and the way he lays matches out is very much in the style of Giant Baba. And so they shouldn't work, yet they are that good, they do. And you had Sonata's beard, which is a bit of an issue. We'll come to that later. But what are you thinking of old man Suzuki and Sonata pulling things out at the moment?
They always say it's an old cliche, isn't it? Opposites attract. That's definitely what you're going to get with these two. As a long-time, grumpy, old, angry man, I absolutely adore Minoru Suzuki. He can do no wrong. I and especially if he was around me, I would hold my breath in case I offended him.
Of course you would.
Sanada's done amazingly well to overcome the stank of TNA / Impact / whatever you want to call them. I would say the beard conversation has to happen at some point. I believe we'll get to that at some point in the podcast. But yeah, put those two together, it's just, you know, it's going to be gold. It's just, you know, what direction you want to go in. Did they let Suzuki take the lead in the match and work more his style, or do you lean towards Sanada's style? It's just how you're going to cope with it at the end.
Yeah, I mean, let's get to the beard. Let's be honest. The Trooping Your Show production chat has been awash with beard talk since, you know, Sonata grew it out. And now, you know, you don't see him for a couple of weeks. He's not on the there's no shows for a couple of weeks, and you see him now. And it's kind of he's gone the full Amish with a mohawk. It's difficult to describe, and it's causing us quite a considerable amount of pain and displeasure to watch it. I mean, watching him wrestle is still absolutely awesome, but what the hell is going on with his face?
Well, I will hear no bad words said against beards. I have a long and bushy beard in places as well myself, so if Sanada wants to go out and become one of us, I'm all good with that.
No, I'm not questioning the beard. That isn't the problem, because I am
the mohawk might be a step too far.
I am a bearded man as well. It's the Amish and the frosted tips everywhere.
Well, it's obviously just building up to a surprise return for Angry Amish Roadkill from ECW.
It's getting to Nigel McGuinness levels of frosted tips.
Oh, God, no, don't bring back memories of Michael Cole as well with those.
So, yeah, he's going to have somebody's eye out with that beard eventually, I think.
Maybe that's his next finisher.
Yeah, maybe so. But yeah, absolutely thrilling match. Go watch that match. You have to see that match. It is exceptionally good. In the next rubber match, because obviously this was for the tag team titles, kind of the build-up. It's an old-fashioned build-up. It's a very NWA build-up, having a singles match between the two team members before you go to the big match. I liked it a lot. It was old-fashioned, good booking.
It's always how I used to do it when I played the EWR on the computer. If you had a tag team title, then the cards building up to that would just be singles matches between the two guys.
Yes, there you go. It's very Dusty Rose, George Scott, isn't it? There you go. There's no one.
Nothing
knows
wrong with that.
No one knows who George Scott is. George Scott was the house show producer and long-term booker for the WWF in the mid-1980s, and was responsible for shaping the British Bulldogs and Hart Foundation's feuds, and went off to be booker for the NWA as well. He started off with, I think first job was main booker in the early 80s in the NWA. Built loads of connections in Canada. The NWA didn't want to go to Canada. Mid-Atlantic Crockett Promotions, went to the WWE, who would quite happily go to Canada. and so took all his connections with him. And he was a really important booker, but he did that a lot. A lot of his ideas were based around like tag team wrestling, and because he came from hot tag team territories in the time. And this is one of his ideas, and it's a very sensible idea. Anywho, yes, Evil defeated Zack Sabre Jr. to get the LIJ back on top in 22 minutes. Another thoroughly thrilling matchup, because it's kind of reminded me of Shinsuke Nakamura versus Kazuchika Okada when they main evented the G1 a couple of years ago. You've got that polar opposite style issue. Evil is a spot guy. Everything is spots. Bang, bang, bang. Zack Sabre Jr. is the antithesis of a spot guy. Everything he does is super smooth. One thing slinks into the other like Nakamura used to do. So as a result of that, everything works, because you've got one guy posting for the other guy, and it just fits perfectly, for as far as I could see.
Yeah, you can have Saber linking through to every single spot that Evil wants to hit, and then taking over and leading it through to the next spot again. It's one of these things. Zack Sabre Jr. is one of my favourite guys to watch. I just love, like you say, how smooth everything is. He just, it makes it almost look too easy, you know, if you know what I mean, if that makes any sense. With Sabre Jr., it's just like every single thing he does, he just looks like he's been doing it for years, and to be fair, he has.
He nearly did it as well. He keeps trying to do the Gym Break Special, which you've not seen the Gym Break Special. It's a ridiculous move from the 1970s of Gym Breaks, where he basically twists somebody's arm so the palm of the hand is facing into the rib cage and then does a lift with it. And he keeps doing that to people, and he nearly gets it on, and then he gets cut off because it's a ridiculous move. But the fact they tried to do it to Evil and nearly succeeded in the front row is... Oh, brilliant. Just love the guy. I love watching the guy wrestle.
And I'm a big, big fan of Evil. Again, this is another guy I was lucky enough to get to see when Ring of Honor played the Indra. And my entire highlight of the night, nothing that happened in the ring, it was during the intermission when Evil was sat at the merchandise table trying to sell his 8x10s. Very limited grasp of English. And as you can appreciate from my accent, the Scottish way of speaking English is not necessarily the Queen's English. So he's got this big queue of people, like, and he's signing photographs, and this guy comes stoating by, and he says to him, "All right, big man, that match was cracking, by the way." And he just looks up and says, "Thank you."
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's supposed to be a brilliant experience for him.
The other thing that blew my mind from meeting these guys in Edinburgh was it was the earlier show that about 6 months before Omega and the Young Bucks were over, and the Young Bucks were amazed to find that Scotland had McDonald's. And Matt actually said to Nick, "Dude, of course they have McDonald's. McDonald's is a Scottish name," and I didn't have the heart to correct him.
Right then, that match was excellent, and so was the main event. Bad Luck Fale and Jay White defeat the Dream Team, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada, in 24 minutes and 36 seconds. I want Tanahashi and Okada to wrestle less good guys, just so they can get their friggin' ridiculous finish sequence over with. Have you seen this?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Okay, so it starts with Okada doing the Tombstone Piledriver, followed by a High Fly Flow. Sorry, no, a Tombstone Piledriver, followed by a Styles Clash, followed by the elbow drop from Okada, followed by a High Fly Flow to finish.
That sounds like something I will be going straight to Twitter to look for a GIF of after we finish recording.
But it takes them that long to do. And they nearly got it on Jay White. They nearly did, but they didn't. And essentially, Bad Luck Fale and Jay White. Got to say, Bad Luck Fale, when he needs to, turns it on real good. You know, he doesn't have to do this very often anymore because he's not a mainstay main eventer like he was a couple of years ago. But when they need him, he is there like clockwork, and he will do anything they need him to do. If they need him to be a big, bad monster eater, he will be the big, bad monster heater they need him to be. Jay White takes the win and takes out his frustrations on Tanahashi and Okada going into the main event for this weekend show, which has just passed, which I think was yesterday or today. I've not seen it yet. But yeah, so that was the main event. What are your thoughts on these guys at the moment then, Tony?
You're making a couple of points I was going to bring up. We've seen, but ties back to what we're talking earlier about Jay White being in the ring with these guys and lending him some credibility. And Bad Luck Fale. Bad Luck Fale's a guy I absolutely love. I've got this weird obsession with guys that they look like they don't know what they're doing, but they're actually geniuses when you look into what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
Fale, again, without trying to draw too many comparisons to WWE, but Fale appears to be the new Japan Kane. You ask him to do something, he'll do it. He's not necessarily going to be the guy, but he's going to be the guy you beat to get to the guy.
Yeah, definitely. He's back in that enforcer role that he played for AJ Styles and he played for Kenny Omega. And they're going to have to go through him to get to Jay White. That's going to be the way they play things, because that's Bullet Club's MO. You know, protect the leader at all costs.
Yep, and Fale's as good a guy as any of that, because he's basically a wall in his own right.
Yeah, that's it. All right then, we move on to the second night, which featured Doa Henare defeating Yoti Tsuji in 7 minutes and 7 seconds in a perfectly watchable match. Tsuji's pretty good. I think he should be good. Doa Henare chugging along nicely there. See what happens with him. He doesn't seem to really get anywhere at the minute, and he has got a very generic Savage style gimmick, which I'm not particularly keen on. But not that you can do with him other than what he's doing right now. He will get his opportunities and see if he gets into the New Japan Cup. I guess that's probably the best place for him at the moment.
It's one of these things, isn't it? They have to find their way before you can start to develop them any further. And if that's what it takes, of doing this generic thing to just learn the basic building blocks, what you can work off, then that, I suppose that's how it's done. It's been done that way for years.
Yeah, definitely. Next up was Manubi Nakanishi and Tiger Mask. They defeated Iota Yoshida and Shota Umino, who got even closer to winning, but still didn't win. In 9 minutes and 31 seconds, Nakanishi being lumpy again. Tiger Mask being stiff with young guys, because that's pretty much all he does.
It's a fine tradition that he's up holding it well.
He's been around forever. He's like, it, yeah, I mean, again, the first Michinoku Pro show we looked at, he was on that, you know, and that was from like 96. But yeah, he's been, both guys have been around forever, and Naoto Yoshida and Shota Umino have got about 3 years between them, so it was going to be fun, because it's just fun.
I was just going to say, again, ties back to something we were discussing on that previous show. If you're in the ring with guys that have been there and done it, you can't help but learn from just being in the ring with them and hanging about with them, and that's what these matches are perfect for.
Yes, it is. True. Right then, next match was Hiroshi Tenzan and Ren Narita, and they defeated Tsukigun by disqualification. He's seeing a pattern here. once again,
yes, via DQ, he's coming through a lot.
Once again, Tenzan offered his hand to Iizuka, but no, he was not to be, and Iizuka went on a rampage. In fact, his most active I've seen in about 3 years, to be honest with you. He's really letting it all, leaving it out on the field in his last week in wrestling, I have to say. So I'm going to be interested to see what he does with the main event. Eight-man tag team match next, because it was, well, sorry, did anything you want to say about those, that particular tag team match? Because I was going to say we kind of covered it, and I should stop interrupting you. Sorry.
No. You covered it all there. If I don't have anything worthwhile to say, I won't say anything, which is why I'm going to be fairly quiet for the rest of the show.
You always have something worthwhile to say, Tony. All right, then.
Clearly haven't listened to any of my shows in the past.
Move on to the eight-man tag match. Great Bash heel, Togi Makabe and Tamaki Honmi, tagged with Reisuki Taguchi and Taro Yano to defeat Bullet Club, Taiji Ishimori, Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and Yujiro Takahashi in 14 minutes and 15 seconds. Remarkably, Tama Tonga was even more of a good guy this time round.
Oh, God bless God. Tama Tonga and all who's sailing him.
Yeah, fun match. Just fun. Yano and Taguchi.
There's going to be anything else with Yano in there. Come on.
Yeah, it's just Yano and Taguchi, and I'm not keen on them. Makabe plays it straight for these two lunatics all the time. And it's just amazing to watch him play it straight as well. I just enjoy it so much. It's really cool.
I do love that dynamic of like two guys who just have no clue what they're doing next, let alone anyone else, and the straight guy who just can't believe he's in the middle of all this.
Oh dear, yes. All right then, next was a six-man tag match. Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Chase Owens and Jay White defeat Chaos, Kazuchika Okada, Yoshihashi and Hiroshi Tanahashi, 17 minutes and 57 seconds. This was really good. Again, they need someone to make the match really, really good. They need a workhorse. Out of all the guys in Bullet Club, they pick Chase Owens. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, clearly they're listening to us. Yeah. Even though we are saying it after it's happened, they're clearly travelling forward in time and listening to what we've been saying.
We've been saying, well, me and Christy and Chelsea have been saying Chase Owens is the stuff for a long time now. So, you know, we like him a lot, and we have always liked him.
Again, cool. There, Jay White, you know, slowly piling up the wins against the big guns.
Yeah, that's it. I was thinking it was Kevin Kelly said on commentary. You know, the dream team has not done well together. The results have not been the greatest sum of the parts of what they've been together. They've lost every time. So it's like they need kind of like to get some momentum back together. And it's partly, you know, the story of Okada trying to find himself and whatever tag partners they've dragged in to try and get it, make it work, you know, to make it three and threesomes. But yeah, it's not.
Do you think there's possibility of some foreshadowing here of an eventual another Okada Tanahashi series going on?
I don't know. I don't think there is. I think Okada's trying. The storyline at the minute is Okada's trying to get himself back to the main event quality, and the only way he can do that is to take the pressure off. And also, he wants Jay White in the worst way for everything he did to Chaos whilst he was in it. The derision that he sowed for getting him off his game as he was going into Wrestle Kingdom and dropping the championship. You know, all of those things. That's the reason why he wants Jay White, and that's kind of his focus. He's not bothered about championships at the minute. Championships will come. Championships are it's the same old thing. Road Warriors, Paul Ellering. Championships are a matter of achievement, but ruling the wrestling world is a matter of pride. Okada knows he rules the wrestling world. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a really basic story, but it's all you need when you've got a guy on a card like Okada on one side and Jay White on the other.
Yeah. It works. It's fine. And, you know, he will get back to him. Bad luck Farley on the big show for Okada. Hiroshi Tanahashi gets Jay White. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Really interested to see how that plays out. And I'm looking forward to Okada versus Bad Luck Farley. If he's in this mood and he's got his work boots on, that could be actually something quite special.
Yeah, it's the big guy versus the not as big guy, even though, I mean, saying that, Okada's quite big himself, but
yeah.
Put him in the ring with Bad Luck Farley and he's going to look like a junior heavyweight against him.
We'll see how that develops, but it should be fun, definitely. The next match up was actually giving you 7.7 by the Cage Match users, 4 stars from your Meltzer there. Los Ignorables de Japón successfully defend the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships against former champions Suzuki Gun, El Desperado, and Yoshinobu Kanemura, 18 minutes and 4 seconds. Pretty good match, because these four cannot have bad matches. They don't. You know, I mean, like, Kanemura is... I really enjoyed Kanemura over the last year. When he first turned up, he was cruising. You know, I've seen his stuff in Noah. I know how good he can be. And I realize he's older and he's on the last leg of his career, and this is clearly a big payday to finish things out. But he's trying really hard now. He's keeping up with these young kids, and he's doing amazing things.
Yeah, and again, that's what you were touching on earlier there. It's a bit a touch of the pride about him. If he's seen all this going on around him, and maybe he's come to the realisation that he was cruising, maybe necessarily didn't realise it, but when he's watching back and seeing all these matches going on around him, he's maybe thought, well, I can still hang with these guys. I'm going to show you how much I can actually do.
I would also say guys like Minoru Suzuki will tell you when you're slacking.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. repeatedly and forcefully.
Yeah, and Suzuki did it himself. You know, the... Again, Michael Cole was saying, not Michael Cole, good God.
don't give me that.
No one mentions WWE stuff normally, and then I got mixed up. New Japan commentator, Kevin Kelly, there you go. Kevin Kelly was saying how, like, Minoru Suzuki realized a couple of years ago he wasn't at the top of the card where he thought he should be, and he went reconditioned, rededicated himself to his profession, and he got fit again, lost weight, put more cardio time in, got back on the mats and tried to get more new and different ideas to get things together. So Suzuki will tell you, those guys in Suzuki, it's not just a kayfabe storyline. Those guys hang out all the time. Desperado is Suzuki's best mate. They go on the mats all the time, and it's noticeable that Desperado got good when Minoru Suzuki got hold of him.
There's the New Japan web show I need to see. Is Desperado and Suzuki on the road?
Just Instagram. Suzuki's Instagram.
Oh, excellent.
Just all the time. Suzuki's broadcasting. They're driving down the road. There's Desperado with a baseball cap on and a bandana around his face so you can't see his face. And they're just talking all the time. And they're just like, rough shows. That's it. That's all they do. Yeah.
Suzuki's one of my favorite guys to watch. It just brings a different level of legitimacy that I don't think very few people have ever had or will ever have.
No, he's just a badass. He's a bad, bad man. And all of those Suzuki Gun guys are, you know, I mean, even the workers, I mean, like Kanemura does look like a badass. You know, he's slightly built, or as me and Christy call him, drunk uncle at a wedding, Kanemura. But he does, he looks the part. He looks like a wrestler should look. They all do. And it's, you know, especially like Killer Elite Squad as well. They look like badasses. And that's what they're supposed to look like. And that's what they do.
Yep, Killer Elite Squad, one of my favourite tag teams, vastly underrated, I think.
Right then, yes indeed, I would completely agree with you. Right, next match up was for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. Los Ignorables de Japón, Evil and Sanada successfully defend against Suzuki Gun. You see a pattern developing here too. Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. in 16 minutes and 52 seconds. The Rev Pro Champions could not overturn the World Tag Team Champions. But it was a thrill ride all the way. And again, that dynamic of two spot-based orientated wrestlers going up against two mat-based grapplers created all kinds of chemistry and fireworks you would not see in any other kind of match. I absolutely love and adore both of these teams for completely different reasons. Evil and Sonata, I can't really have any tag teams that kind of historically they match up to. They're just special. They're just really, really good. Big guys who can go, got some aerial talent to them, tough as nails, know what their characters are about. Playing the baby faces here, which was kind of goes against their type, but were really, really good. Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. are excellent as the vicious heels that IWGP, and sorry, New Japan kind of need at this particular moment in time. And it was just a classic story. These teams are just amazing, Tony. What do you think of them?
Yeah, Evil and Sonata. That's the tag team. I saw them in Edinburgh, and they were amazing. They were just fantastic. It's just one of those things. It's like everything they do, just they actually work as a tag team rather than two individuals that are forced to be together. Just everything they do just oozes quality.
Yeah, it does, and it's like it's kind of a throwback to the old New Japan days where they used to put two singles guys together. You know, this was the there was no secondary championship in New Japan. The tag titles were the secondary championship. If you were a tag team champion, you had a fair shot of getting a shot at the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. You know, it's not like today where you have four heavyweight singles titles and two tag team divisions, and it's probably a bit too much gold kicking about because they're finding it hard to make it all special. Whereas back then, everything was special because there was only one championship, and there was only one tag team championship, and there was one junior heavyweight championship, and that was your lot.
If everything is special, then nothing is special.
Exactly. And then don't get me wrong, they feed out things amongst their different champions really, really well, which means the NEVER Openweight Championship is important. Will Ospreay is an important person for holding it, you know. Whereas other people, whereas other companies don't get that kind of thing. I mean, the US Championship in New Japan means way more than the US Championship in the WWE.
If it even still exists these days, but that's another conversation for another day.
Indeed. On the other podcast on the Treepenny Show channel, you can find Freelance Wrestling Rewind every Wednesday, where Mike will talk to Tony sometimes, Dara sometimes, Kat sometimes, maybe other people. We don't know.
Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which I am very fond of because it is one of the best place names in the world.
I was saying this to Mike the other day. We mentioned Marcus, and I says, yes, James is very, very fond of saying Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I am.
Why not?
Indeed, it's awesome. Baton Rouge is a cool place. I want to go visit, not just to see Marcus. I would like to actually go to Louisiana in general, especially New Orleans. Anywho, that's another podcast. Main event time. IWGP Heavyweight Intercontinental Championship match. Tatsuya Naito successfully defends against Tai Chi in 21 minutes and 31 seconds in one of the most bizarre New Japan main events I have ever seen. This was
just looking at the names involved on paper, you just know bizarre. One side, great. The other side, Tai Chi.
I was wondering how this was going to work. I'll be honest. I'm like, I've seen Tai Chi try and do 16 minutes with Evil, and it wasn't that watchable. So this is going to be pretty good to figure out how the hell this is going to work. Anyway, so Tai Chi's waiting for Naito. He's stood at the ringside, and Naito gets halfway down the ramp, and he's jumped from behind by Iizuka. And Iizuka nails him. I mean, like, submarines him with a chair. And then he pile drives him on the rampway and then hits him with a chair again. And Naito sells it as a stretcher job. He just is passed out cold. And there's a lot of deliberation, and they get him in the back because it happened before the bell rings, and they're not really sure. And what we're going to do? And Bushi comes out to see him. The boss says it's all right. So Naito crawls his way back to the ring. And Tai Chi lays into him, and he tries to get things going, and he can't. And the story is the comeback, and it takes 21 minutes to come back against Tai Chi and actually defeat him. But Tai Chi kicked out of Destino, and it was a clean Destino as well. It took two Destinos to get rid of Tai Chi. That makes Tai Chi a breakout star, even if he doesn't win the championship. And it was a match that was actually worth watching for that kind of jeopardy. I still wasn't impressed by it, but it was very old school. In fact, essentially, it was the Terry Funk storyline of the 1970s of the babyface getting beaten up and coming back through the crowd with a bandage over his eye, bleeding profusely, and, you know, coming back to win the match. It was a very old school trope tried in front of, you know, a crowd that probably had never seen it before. It was just really genius booking to get this to work.
was going to say that. Yeah, it sounded very much like a sort of Southern America, not South America, but Southern. Well, that's an entirely different kind of wrestling. You know, like your NWA or your Memphis kind of thing, where, like you say, the baby face gets done over and has to crawl back to the ring with the people screaming and crying for him. And you know, 21 minutes against Tai Chi to get this terrible story out of that, let alone watchable, is just a minor miracle.
Yeah, it was just like, I'm watching it, I'm going, what are they going to do now? Well, this is intriguing. Also, this is intriguing me. What is going to happen at this particular juncture? And it's like, because honestly, I was watching it on the bus home because I was trying to get it watched so we could record it yesterday. It was on Thursday I was watching it. And I'm like, I get off the bus and I can't walk with my backpack on and get the shopping and get back to my office to watch it, the rest of it, in one go, obviously, because it's just not possible. So I stick it. I'm just going to listen to it on commentary like radio. Okay. So I'm listening to it, and literally the time it took me to walk from the bus stop to Tesco's, get all the shopping I needed and walk the half mile to my office, nothing happened. It was just Kevin Kelly going, I don't know what's going to happen. So it was just... And it was like, I completely got the picture. And they didn't realize how good Kevin Kelly is at his job, because he essentially commentated on nothing for 5 minutes and made it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Kelly, again, I hate to use the word underrated so much, but Kevin Kelly's one of those guys. He's built himself a nice little stellar career out of being a punchline for The Rock, basically, when he started out. Vastly superior on commentary to some of the other people that New Japan have. I'm sure you'll agree with me there.
Well, to be fair to him, this time it was Andrew Boy Simmons of Your Rev Pro, which was a nice change from Don Callis. yeah, I mean, I miss Chris Charlton, and Chris couldn't make it because he had work commitments. Unfortunately, the trouble with Chris Charlton is he actually works for a living and has to do the job properly. He can't just go to any wrestling show he wants to.
Oh, live the dream.
Yeah, so he's like, he's not getting paid for everything, so he has to like actually work for his job. So unfortunately, we can't correct Chris Charlton, and obviously Don Callis can't do every show either because they're building up to the current Impact major taping that they're doing. So it was... Andy Boy Simmons, who was perfectly serviceable as a commentator. I've got a feeling that the American fans probably would not understand half a word of what your Cockney there, Andy, says.
Oh, to be fair, I've watched a few of the Rev Pro shows on Free Sports here in the UK, and it's been Kevin Kelly and Simmons commentating on there, and they seem to have a nice little chemistry going.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, like, Andy Boy Simmons has done some pretty cool commentary jobs with Kevin Kelly on Rev Pro, and I agree with you, but it's just nice not to have to listen to Callis.
Yeah, I mean, he started out great, and then I don't know whether it's been, you know, he slowly believed his own hype or... you know, bought into himself so much, but he just started off good and then he just seemed to go off a cliff.
I've never been a fan of his. I didn't really enjoy him ECW, to be honest with you. It might be my taste, but he's a bit, I don't like heel commentators. And I know I'm not supposed to like heel commentators, but I genuinely don't like the way he speaks.
Yeah, there's a difference between not liking the heel commentator because they're saying heelish things and not liking them because they're just an idiot.
Yeah, it's just too much. You know, you can imagine how much fun Impact Wrestling for me is now, because essentially I just watch it in silence because
the TV deal that Impact Wrestling have these days is equivalent to Don Callis running about his back garden with a flip book, so you don't have much to watch.
No, I mean, yeah, well, essentially it's like I'm trying to listen to it on the lowest volume possible so I don't have to listen to them two caterwauling inanities for 2 hours. And then it gets to the first match, and there'll be Sammy Callahan, so I'd skip that. And then it'll be Rich Swann, so I'll skip that. And then eventually I'll get to something I actually want to watch, which will probably be the women's match.
I was going to say it'd be Tessa Blanchard.
Well, Ali. Ali, Rosemary, Taya Valkyrie, Hogan, Kira Hogan. Then Tessa Blanchard. That'll be fine. I like Tessa. She's all right, but she's... not as good as everyone thinks she is. It's my problem with her.
Yeah, Impact seemed to be kind of overexposing them as well. It's like every, yeah. It's like the old joke about it's when you've seen The Simpsons and Poochie was introduced to it, and it's like, oh, Poochie isn't on screen. Have the characters ask, where's Poochie? It's kind of the same with Tessa Blanchard at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Grace is awesome, and I love her. And I like the fact they actually have a wrestling kind of roster there now. Lots of women to do more than one storyline a week, which is nice. And they should have had for a while. But yeah, Callis and Josh Matthews on commentary is audio syphilis. Irritating, awful, and you're never going to get rid of it.
I was actually going to add that line if you didn't add it there, but never get rid of it.
Right then, let's move on to your main event. Oh, we talked about the main event. Yeah, we were talking about Tai Chi and NATO, weren't we, before we got sidetracked?
Yes.
Yes, it was good. It was a Tai Chi match. It was the kind of Tai Chi match I'm going to enjoy because he did nothing for 15 minutes.
Which is 10 minutes longer than he usually does nothing for.
Yeah, it's like Mark Kermode used to say about Steven Seagal performances. I think there was one film he's in, I really like this film. Why? Because Steven Seagal died after 3 minutes. It's kind of like that. It's that kind of like thinking, if Tai Chi's not actually doing anything, I'm quite all right with it. It's when he starts doing stuff, the problems start to come about. So there. Anyway. But yeah, so that was New Beginnings, part one and part two. We've got New Beginnings part three next week. Tony, what are your thoughts on part three? Is there anything you're looking forward to, you would like to see?
I think I'm going to have to really go back and watch part one and part two and pick up on a lot of the subtle pointers that head towards part three. I will get around to watching it at some point this week, hopefully, so I'll be staying off the internet and avoiding spoilers if such a thing is possible these days.
Well, I hope you enjoy the show, and I hope you enjoy the show too. I hope you've enjoyed our show as well. I'd like to thank Mr. Tony Gotham of your Mike Freeland's Wrestling Rewind there for coming and joining us and helping us out today.
No problem. Glad to be here. I love the Troop Penny show, the fact that it's like some of the best minds in wrestling, and here I come to bring the average back down again.
Well, you can find Tony at _Eno on Twitter. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find the show at Troop Penny Show on Twitter and on Facebook, The Troop Penny Show. And you can also find us on Patreon, where you can keep The Troop Penny Show free forever for everyone. We'll be back next week with part three of New Beginnings from New Japan. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye. ¶¶